For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team and remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast. I'm Manu Veit, and he is not Stefan Bienkowski, he is Sepp Stafford-Blur. Stefan is getting a much-deserved day off, so I had to recruit help, and I got help here from Sepp, joining us from The Athletic. Sepp, it's been way too long. I'm so glad you were able to join me today.
Yeah, we were just saying that before we started recording. It's been ages. It's very nice to be back on.
The last time you were on, I was on holiday. And then, you know, that puts a gap in. And I think you came on a couple more times with Stefan where I wasn't there.
Yeah, I did one with Matt and Stefan, I think, right at the beginning of February. It's been a while now, but it was just after the resumption, after the winter break. So it's been probably about 6 weeks, I think.
Oh, way too long. We need to ensure that this doesn't happen again. That we don't have long breaks. And then, of course, I'm probably going to see you soon as well. May comes closer. May is usually when I spend a lot of time in Germany to finish up the season. And so can't wait.
Hatching plans around the Hamburg Derby.
Hatching plans around. Yeah, we were talking about that before the show. That could be decisive for the promotion.
So there is a scenario that we discussed where, although St. Pauli look like they're probably doing it sooner, there is a scenario in which they clinch their promotion in the Volkspark.
Oh, can you imagine that?
That'd be pretty tough to take if you're a HSV fan.
I think let's do this anyways. We can talk about this before we get into the actual Bundesliga stuff. I do think both are going up.
Me too.
I think they made the change. HSV made the change at just the right time.
Interesting you say that, Manny, because I watched the first half today and I thought, oh, don't know. Because last week, Baumgart's HSV seemed very cross-heavy. It seemed very formulaic. There seemed to be absolutely no kind of green shoots of understanding anywhere in the side. But today, particularly in the second half against Wiesbaden, there was chemistry and there was a little bit of power to their attacking. And actually, it turned into probably the most authoritative performance I've seen from them in months and months and months. And felt pretty good about their promotion chances after that game. They had to win it, but they did. So we shall see.
Yeah, I think too, what kind of stuck out to me too, there was a picture or a moment after the game where they all kind of stood on the pitch relieved. It felt like the weight of the world had fallen off Baumgart and every single HSV player. And that is sort of I got the sort of sense like, oh, they could really be clicking now.
You ever thought that, it's a theory, and I know there's never been only one thing wrong with HSV, but sometimes it does seem to me as if their stadium is too big for them, for some of those players, because you have this really unique situation where a huge football club, a club that have been down for so long now that they've had to assemble really a Zweite Bundesliga squad, with a few exceptions. There are a couple of players there that would start in the Bundesliga. And when it's full, for people who don't know, it's nearly 60,000 when full. Yeah. That's an awfully lot. There's a huge amount of expectation for players who, generally speaking, do not have a lot of Bundesliga mileage. and
yeah.
It's problematic. The problem with Haas Vauer is emotional.
Yeah.
Because not talent within that group. So if they can conquer that, then they should be able to do a good thing.
I think it's fascinating to say that because I remember when I covered the relegation playoffs last year.
Oh, yeah.
And
when we were in the same stadium without knowing. Remember that in Stuttgart?
What did in fairness, you get easily lost there.
It was the lowest point of our friendship.
I have to say too, that stadium is going to be magnificent when it's finished.
Yeah,
A magnificent stadium. The one in Stuttgart, Volksparkstadion, is a magnificent stadium too, and I want to get to that in a second. But because of the way the construction site is, and you have to walk straight through the construction site to get to the press box, I'm not surprised we missed each other.
Yeah.
And it's a massive press box. It's huge because it was built for the World Cup, right? And I guess now being renovated for the Euros, so it fits a lot of people. So it's not surprised we didn't see each other.
But to get there, to get up to the press entrance, and it was the first time I'd been as media, you have to take all these routes that look like they're very much not the way. Like temporary-looking lifts and staircases, which you think, oh, I don't want to go up there. And it feels like someone's pranking you when they say, oh, you know, no, go that way, be fine.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay.
Construction-style lift.
Yeah, but also like my German's a little better now, but it wasn't very good at all then. And so
because it's almost a year ago, right? So
Yeah.
Anyways, I want to talk about that moment after the game in Stuttgart when they asked Tim Walter, what gives you any hope? And he kind of had this million miles there, completely hope seemed completely lost, and he just said their Volkspark, you know, the stadium. And I think it's such a heavy it's kind of, you know, and this is the first topic we're going to jump into today, is kind of like the Westfalenstadion for Dortmund. It can be such a uplifting experience but such a heavy weight on your shoulders too. In that match, there was, you know, in that second relegation playoff game, there was a moment
first
where the first half, you thought, okay, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Kittel scores.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I forget who was in goal. Florian Müller was in goal for Stuttgart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think.
Yes, because Nürnberg arrived on loan in the summer.
Yeah, exactly. And he played pretty well in the first half. Mm-hmm. And beside Haas Vauer and Dompe and Kittel and Glatzel all had chances. When it's loud, it is loud.
Really loud, yeah.
In a way that I love being there when times are good. When it's not good, it's a terrible place to be. But when times are good, you think, guys, this is a place. This is a real destination in world football. This, like Fred Derby or like I was at the Schalke game right at the beginning of the season on the first day. And one of those nights where you know, when you leave a football stadium, you think, I'm so glad I was here. And you have no real need. I'm a well-wisher for Hamburg football teams, but I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
But it was just, it's a wonderful place. But I think a lot of players struggle with it.
Yeah, I've covered two relegation playoffs there now with the same outcome.
Did you go to the Hertha Berlin one?
Yeah, I did.
Because that was worse.
That was
That was so much worse.
And I suspect there's a chance of covering another one this summer. So,
but I don't think they need to fear the relegation playoff if
no,
they go
because
there.
I think the team that's gonna finish 16th in the Bundesliga is gonna be bad. Whether that's Köln, I think it's actually going to be Mainz.
One of the two.
Yeah, and I think they're beatable. So there's hope, I think, for HSV to go up. And it'd be hilarious that after years of not having any teams in the Bundesliga, all of a sudden you have two. Which of course, you know, wish Hamburg all the best because it also increases your chances actually coming out of the end of that with still a team in the Bundesliga the year after that. So we keep our eyes on that because I think that's something that we will have to cover in great depth when we get closer to it, especially when we get closer to the Hamburger Derby. We do have quite a lot to cover for what happened in the first division as well. And we want to sort of keep our eyes on the teams that are still in the Champions League, that's Dortmund and Bayern, right? We could also talk about Leverkusen, but Leverkusen seem to be strolling to the inevitable end, which is their first ever championship. I think at this stage, Seb, if it doesn't happen, it's never happened. happening for this team. It's, you know, even today, it just seems like they're just doing what's necessary.
It's really interesting. I think I would kind of characterize it as an emotional resilience now.
Yeah.
Like they've come off a short week, right? They've
yeah.
In the Europa League, they had a really emotional moment in the Europa League too. And they weren't fantastic today, Freiburg, but they were good enough. And we actually, we described it as muscle memory before we started recording.
Yeah.
Which I think, and you made it, you described it as being quite Bayern-like, which I think is a really good description because that's what you do, right? When you're in that position, you just tick over. No one will remember this game, maybe for Wirtz's goal, but not for the performance.
You jump as high as you have to. Same with Karabakh. They were like, oh, we could lose this game. Let's put up a gear. It's like, oh, we still need a goal. Let's just finish it now. It's Bayern-like. And they have a lot of games. This international, I said this on a show a couple of weeks ago. If Leverkusen go into the international break with 10 points to Bayern, it's over. Simply because they will have 2 weeks now, right? Where they can completely reset and Boniface is going to come back.
Boniface will come back.
Yep. That will be that. And that will be that. You know, it's just they needed to get to this international break without dropping points. They did. And
you know, it's just pretty interesting, Manu, is that all the kind of the top level heroes of this Leverkusen squad have got their just deserves and everyone's praised them. I think a really important detail has been how like some of the kind of the second class citizens within that squad and some of the kind of the supplementary players have performed. So Andrus is an obvious one because they've been able to move him around a little bit. Nathan Teller, I remember when
such
he moved
a good over signing,
me,
such signing a good
because
signing.
It's allowed them to absorb that that sort of mild injury that Jeremy Frimpong suffered 6 weeks ago. They've allowed Frimpong to come back at his own pace without overplaying him. Teller's been absolutely magnificent at certain times. It's really impressed me. And then they've also managed to keep, I suppose you probably say, four world-class centre-halves as well, because Incapié, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't start the season. Kasuno has been a revelation. They nearly sold him over the summer.
Yeah.
Tapsoba, we knew about. Jonathan Tarr's career renaissance has been kind of wonderful to watch. And I don't know. Also, I think if you'd said to me a year ago, you could win a Bundesliga title with Lukas Radetzky, I'd say, no, I don't think so.
I got called out by James Thorogood on a broadcast because I was
on a commentary.
Yeah.
That's savage.
I texted, he didn't mention me by name, but like he's been on a show with me a couple times where I criticized Radetzky and I texted him afterwards and I'm like, did you just call me out? He's like, yes, I was thinking of you. He said, savage. Like, there's been people criticizing Radetzky for not being good enough to win a title. I'm like, I watched that and listened to it.
And but just like, but there was a
the
fair observation.
The team just called me out, and yes, he did. But yes, I happily say that I didn't think Radetzky was good enough keeper to win a title, and I'm happy to admit that I was wrong.
Well done, good for you. That was some excellent bigger personing.
But you know what? You know, this is also the first year that he has kind of shown that he can be this goalkeeper, right? I guess Leverkusen always knew it. And I also think that they were quite smart signing a really strong backup to kind of maybe help him elevate his performances a little bit.
I suppose also, if you were being a little bit conspiratorial, you look at some of the players they signed over the summer, so Xhaka, Hoffman, Grimaldo, these are leaders, so if you do have a situation where Radetzky's form drops off a cliff, you lose your captain, but only in the literal sense. Right?
Yeah.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, I think so too. It takes the weight off him. Anyways, Leverkusen strolling to their first ever Bundesliga title, it appears. Further back, we still have the two Champions League teams, Dortmund, Atletico Madrid. It's kind of hard to criticize Dortmund for their last two performances because they got the job done against PSV, they got the job done against Eintracht Frankfurt today. I think the counterpoint to that is both these games could have also gone a different direction. It was really interesting because we had Matt Ford at the PSV game and had him call in to do our reaction show. And he saw a very different game in stadium than both Stefan and I saw live on television. And it's so fascinating how it can be so different what you see live versus what you see on TV. And I mean, yes, the first 35 minutes against PSV Dortmund were excellent. Today, they got the job done again. I don't know about you, Seb, but I fancy them against Atletico. I know it's weird because...
Well, they're not I don't think it's unreasonable, but... Manu. Yeah, but then this is what we've said all the way through the Champions League with Dortmund. Like, I think, had you asked me before the two Newcastle games, I'd favour Newcastle. Before we knew what Newcastle were.
Totally.
I don't think I really fancied them in Milan. And, you know, they were very, very good that night. And actually, individually, if you look at the difference between some of the, like, just look at the defense, right? So, Hummels and Schlotterbeck are completely different players in Europe than they are in Germany.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
I have no explanation for it, but they are, like, I look at Hummels in the Champions League and he looks 5 years younger.
It's really hard to explain. And I mean, I remember us doing the live show after the Clásico where they got absolutely smashed by up. Bayern. And then a completely different team showed up against Newcastle like 3 or 4 days later. And we've seen that throughout this entire season. And I saw the Atletico Madrid draw and I'm like, that's actually kind of like a perfect team for them. Because they are good on paper. You know, their reputation is probably bigger than what they are at the moment, right? They are a tough playing opponent, which is something that Dortmund actually kind of likes, right? I put them kind of in the same kind of category than like PSV and Newcastle or Milan. It's a very manageable, they still have to play the games and have to win those games, obviously. But I thought it and looked at the straw, I'm like, wow, Dortmund could go pretty deep in a Champions League here.
You could do. I think what gives me a hope. If you hadn't been paying attention to Atletico's season, you'd say clearly they're favourites. But actually, they're not particularly great this year.
No.
And I would say they played above themselves against Inter. Mm-hmm. I think they were pretty fortunate. I really thought that, especially after the first leg, I thought it would go through.
Yeah.
The only reason I worry for them, Manu, is because I think the individual players are of a high level, and I still do think that Edin Terzic's football is individual led to an extent. I think you need heroes is the wrong way of putting it, but you need talisman within your performances to knock over teams like Atletico Madrid in the same way that they did against Newcastle. Like I thought finishing the match was fantastic against Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Jamie Vardy-Gittins was brilliant against AC Milan in the away leg. Like, I think you need that. Whereas if you come up against an informed Griezmann, for instance, as an example, that's a level of player they haven't seen yet in the Champions League. Mbappe is quite a good player, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's okay.
Yeah. He's okay. He's pretty good.
He would sneak into the Dortmund side. I just mean that, like, I think an Mbappe-style player, a Griezmann-style player, I just don't trust that defense. It's not helped by the fact that like Hummels has been magnificent in the Champions League. Save that ridiculous penalty decision against him in Eindhoven.
That is the one thing.
Awful refereeing.
At some point, that referee misfortune that Dortmund have had in this competition must swing into their favor.
You'd think so.
Because the calls that they had against him are just ridiculous. I mean, I'm not a Dortmund fan by any stretch of the imagination, but even I would be like, it's just the amount of refereeing decision that go against them is just kind of weird. And you would think at some point that will go the other way. As my 1860 jersey falls down in the background.
That was like a living metaphor. That was incredible. Like, no one touched it. It just fell off on its own accord. Like, that is, you know, for a club that's had like a million bankruptcies that have been self-inflicted.
Perfect. but yeah, I just think that's... You know, at some point that will have turn around. But like, I find this Dortmund team so very fascinating because nothing would shock me about them at this stage anymore. I could see them finish fifth in the Bundesliga. Don't quote me on this. I don't actually think they're going to win the Champions League, but it wouldn't shock me. You know what I mean?
It would shock me. I mean, I think they're going out. I don't think offensively they have enough going forward. I think also, in the same way that we've described this as being a kind of a virtue of this Dortmund side, I think Atletico are a completely different beast in European football. Because I don't think I'd... There are very few places in Europe I would rather less go than the one that if I needed a result or if I needed to kind of... If I needed to kind of put myself on a steady footing ahead of a second leg. A terrible place to have to go.
True.
And I think Dortmund are built to survive it. At Bayern, I would give more of a puncher's chance just because at Bayern, you have the firepower. You have... You can... Kane aside, you know that you're going to get the kind of the moments of inspiration from a Sané and Musiala, even Gnabry, you know, seems to be coming back into some kind of form of fitness. And you have also, you have a grizzled element to the side that runs all the way through it. So you've got players like Neuer or Müller who, they're not going to be intimidated. Whereas, oh, I don't know, you put Schlotterbeck in there.
I feel like this Dortmund team has walked through the fire in the Champions League this season. And is the second leg in Dortmund or is it there?
Yes, it's in Dortmund.
Okay. I think that is the difference for me. You know, and we were going to talk about Bayern in a moment here. Yes, the second leg is in Dortmund. That makes all the difference.
I kind of said that with more confidence than I really had in what I was saying, so I'm glad you checked that.
That's why I always have several windows open with all these information on myself. But I think that makes all the difference. You get a good result in Madrid, and you know they come back to Dortmund with a 1-1.
Hey, I'd love you to be right. I think it would be... The Bundesliga needs a strong Dortmund. I think also... if the Bundesliga is to get that extra Champions League spot, Dortmund are going to have to win.
We know how to do it. The Dortmund and Bayern have to essentially reach the final. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've got, we're going to get to Bayern and Arsenal later. I know that. But if only one German team progresses from this stage, including Leverkusen, and they're going to play West Ham, it's finished. The Premier League is going to take the fifth place, which it is what it is. But like, I feels more necessary at this point in the Bundesliga's history. I understand it's not ideal that may fall into the hands of RB Leipzig, but at the same time, you know, having more German teams in the top flight of European competition, particularly now, just matters. And also because I'm sick of all the disparaging
farmers
and the kind of
comments,
the crap and all the stuff that you have to... I'm really new to it, so you've had it for many more years than me.
Yep.
But the kind of the attritional effect of hearing about, you know that player that you like that you think is really talented, not that good because he hasn't actually played in England yet, and it's just supposed to make basically want to break a computer screen.
You know, my counter argument is that the two best English players don't actually play in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
One of them plays in Spain and one of them plays in Germany and is actually the captain of the English national team, and that. You know, it's actually a really interesting kind of... I've been thinking about that a lot because the Premier League is incredible, right? It has all this depth, yet the world's best players tend to not play in it. They go and play for, you know, the big teams in Italy. They play for Real, sometimes Barcelona, and they play for Bayern. It's really interesting that it is that way. And, you know, that includes... Bellingham plays for Real Madrid, right? And Harry Kane, who chose Bayern over a bunch of English teams. And that's, I think, is a really interesting story. And I think something that sometimes also gets overlooked a little bit.
I think it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
So I think if we're having this conversation in 5 years' time, I think it becomes a default that you have to play in the Premier League because that's become a kind of an embedded mentality in players who are kind of 15, 16 now.
Yeah.
Whereas... I suppose for someone like Jude Bellingham's a very single-minded person, you know, and guided by, a smart family who understand, you know, how to develop someone and what the best sort of place for his talent is, clearly. But it is interesting. I wonder also whether, so someone like Jamie Bynoe-Gittens, for instance.
Yeah.
I was thinking today when he came on and won that penalty, it's kind of good for him to be where he is because he's not in the England conversation. Very few people in England pay any sort of attention to what he does at a weekend. Maybe when he pops up on a Champions League, like possibly. No one says, hey, this guy's really interesting because he is. Like, if he was playing for Tottenham, right, or Arsenal or a club of that standing in England, the clamor around him would be massive. Because he has those kind of flashes of influence. As it is, he's able to develop, he's able to work on his game. He's also able to have matches where he's not that impactful and where he works out a few flaws and where he's out of the team for a few weeks and no one creates a sort of a melodrama out of it.
Yeah.
And I suppose whilst these guys are they're plowing a development route, at the same time they're proving that you don't need to play in England to have a really great career. Bellingham being a great example. Sancho is complicated, clearly, but you know.
Yeah.
And Kane's situation is, I don't know, it seems like a product of the better you become, the more expensive you are, the fewer options you actually have in football, which is really weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's gone there and it's funny to me because when I want to talk to people in England, they almost, I'm not trying to be patronizing, but they do speak about Bayern Munich as if it's like this little club. And you get the sense that no one really has an appreciation for the scale of Bayern Munich. Not necessarily just in Germany or Bavaria, but globally, the scale of Bayern Munich. It has its own gravity as a club. It's amazing to see it. But it's I love it. It's a bit of variety. And actually, there's a little bit of me which I don't know what it says about me, but I have a pride in watching English players come over here and do well.
You should. Absolutely.
I spent some time with
Seb Bino Gittens. Yeah. If he was German, he'd be in the national team right now.
Yeah, I agree. He would certainly be in the conversation. You know, he'd be contesting for a place with Furyk, possibly, on the left.
Yeah.
But then the guys like Dapa Afalian from São Paulo, when he came over, right? I interviewed him when he was quite new.
Yeah.
And he'd had a bit of a wandering career. He'd spent places. He'd been at Bolton, he'd been in Canada for a little bit. He started at West Ham, I think. And he talked a little bit about the challenges of adapting to life in Germany. And of course, I know what those are because I live here too. And I'm an immigrant and I'm, you know, I'm learning languages and learning about how German people think and do things and, you know, the layers of bureaucracy. And so I understand from like really basic level, you come over here and you're able to conquer some of those things and you're able to achieve. And there's a bit of things, good for you, because that takes something. It's a hard thing to do. So when I know it's different for a Harry Kane who's a very, very wealthy person, but it's still difficult, right? And so I love seeing it. I love people embracing it and taking it on as a challenge. It's good. It's really good.
It's great that we talk about Harry Kane because he's obviously, all the attention is now on him. He hurt his ankle, not for the first time, in the match against Darmstadt. I did a piece on whether he's going to break Robert Lewandowski's goal-scoring record, not knowing that his ankle was actually seriously injured while I was writing it, because that came out afterwards. And I did actually put in a piece, one of the big factors is whether he's going to stay healthy or not. Right now, his pace is actually too low to break Lewandowski's goal-scoring record too. He needs to not increase it by much, but a little bit, you know. But that aside, if Harry Kane is out for longer, because we don't know until the scans come, right? And you know more about this, but the ankle has been a source of concern in the past. I think Bayern Munich's season is essentially over if Harry Kane is out for an extended period of time. And we've already talked about this. I don't mean the Bundesliga season. That's over already. No matter Harry Kane is out, he can score another 20, 30 goals until the end of the season. It won't matter because Leverkusen are going to win anyways. But what I mean is the Champions League. Just like Dortmund, I think that I actually favor Bayern over Arsenal. I think I'm one of the few in that, but here's my reasoning is because I think if Bayern Munich get a result in London, they'll go through because they will win. I think they will win in the Allianz Arena. I think it just will. That goes completely out of the window if Harry Kane isn't fit. If Harry Kane isn't fit for that game, Bayern will have no chance whatsoever. The question then for you, Seb, is Harry Kane going to be fit for this game? Like, how has he dealt with this in the past?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Manny, because you mentioned how many times he's suffered ankle injuries. Yeah. The ankle is a joint that doesn't get better.
No,
it gets progressively worse. The grades, obviously. What you see when he comes back from long-term injuries is he when he plays himself back to fitness, he has a kind of clunkiness where he's not quite in line and kind of in step with the game around him. And so you see sort of a, you know, a declining standard in his touch, less of an ability to knit the play, to drop into those kind of deep positions and play that big switch that he likes, which opens up on the other side of the pitch. So if it's a serious injury, it's kind of a, you know, non-point anyway, because he's not going to make Arsenal.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth saying that until the scans come back, anytime you he suffers any kind of ankle injury, a club is right to be incredibly cautious around it just because of his history. I think certainly up until the 2019 season, he'd suffered an ankle injury in each of the previous three seasons. And none of them were as a result of a weakening of his ankle. They were all just unfortunate contact injuries.
Yeah.
All things that were unlucky, and they occurred by chance. They were contact injuries.
Just like this one. He rattled his post. It was exactly such a fluke, right?
So it's not, but in a way that's good, because it's not descriptive of any problem with him. Actually, he's been incredibly durable over the last few years.
Yeah.
And so me saying, oh, you know, his ankle, it's a little bit lazy on my part. It's just that happens to be his injury history, unfortunately. Yeah. And when he comes back, he does have a little bit of a pattern of needing a few games and a few weeks to actually become as fluid on the ball as Bayern have got used to.
He's a big guy too. I mean, I think
he's a powerful guy.
People don't realize, I don't mean big as in fat, but he has a huge chest.
If you stand next to him. Yeah,
you know, he's a big guy.
We both stood alongside him in the mix zone, and you get a sense for him. He's like an old-fashioned center forward.
Totally.
Yeah, like he's sort of the same build as like a Luca Toni, for instance. Mm-hmm. Not quite. I think Toni
not as tall, but you know, I felt like he, because you know how tall I am, and
I do.
Yeah,
you're a monster of a man. Yeah.
So I kind of felt like he's almost as tall and big as me.
Yeah.
And so I was like, whoa, this is like, you never really get that sense, but he, you know, so what I mean by that is like someone who of that height, I have a history of ankle and knee injuries. I know that it takes longer to get back, because unfortunately, you also need to move that mass. And so the mobility is like, your strength comes back really fast, but it's like all this other stuff that's like your comfort level of having to move your massive body is something that's kind of like takes a little bit longer. And that kind of makes me think, didn't he have a special shoe designed for him as well? Isn't that the reason why he went with Skechers?
Very possibly. I don't know. I am interested though in, I want to dig into your optimism around Bayern, because I don't share it. So I'm curious.
I actually think that it's kind of funny that Tuchel is now leaving, because I actually think Tuchel has, I think that if you play the season again from here on, Leverkusen could possibly still win it, but it'd be very tight. Because I think that Tuchel has all the players playing where he wants them to play. He has guys like Gnabry coming back. Musiala's form is ticking up.
Playing really well, Musiala.
He has actually in Dier and De Ligt. I actually think that's a really strong center pair, back pairing. I think Joshua Kimmich should have been right back a long time ago. Pavlovic is the find of the season. What an amazing player.
Hey, it's really interesting. When I was last in Munich, which was probably 3 weeks ago, maybe just a bit more, I was amazed by how many fans had his name on the back of the jersey. Amazed because he's an academy product, but
Munich born and raised.
Exactly, and so like I that is kind of rational to me, but at the same time, like the speed with which his popularity is gaining pace is quite interesting to me.
Yeah, and Munich loves. And I mean this in a very endearing way, so don't get this wrong. We love our Yugos, you know, anyone from the former Yugoslavia space. I grew up with lots of them, because unlike the other communist countries, they were free to travel and work, right? So 1860s biggest club legend is Petar Radenkovic, Serbian, right? And that goes all the way back to the 60s. So, you know, there's always been a strong connection with them anyways, and he's not only Yugoslavian or Serbian, he's also born and raised in Munich, right? So I think there is that, he hooked people right away.
I think he's deserved. I mean,
he's incredible. Yeah.
I don't want to make it sound like I'm presenting him as some kind of embellishment, because he's played ever so well, and actually I think he really deserves his call up by the national team. It was just the speed with which, I suppose, he had been embraced, because it was based on, I think at the time he'd only made 4 Bundesliga starts by the time I was last there. And it's a great story, and it's, I suppose, also kind of represents a little bit maybe about what the club have lost recently in terms of the connection to the region and a lack of players coming through. That makes some sense.
I mean, Stanisic is another one, right? Like, he plays.
That's why that hurts, man. That's why that hurts as much as it does.
Totally. He represents Croatia, but born and raised in Munich. You know, and again, from a part of the Munich population, because Munich has I think it actually has the biggest immigration population of all cities in Germany. And there's a lot of Italians, there's a lot of Yugoslavian, Turkish, of course, as well, right? A lot of French people too. And so being from Munich often trumps being German, if that makes sense. And I think that's what it does here. Of course, now he represents Germany as well, which is, that's going to make him go through the roof. I mean, to go back to this, my optimism with Bayern, I think that Tuchel is almost freed of the shackles of the policies or the politics of the club. And that allowed him to put Kimmich at right back. That allowed him to put all the players where he thinks they're the best. And look, the second leg against Lazio was incredible. Then they go and beat Mainz 8-1. They had really no problems. I guess, yes, it's Darmstadt. Arsenal is a different beast. Don't get me wrong.
They played very well against Darmstadt.
They did play against, exactly. And then it just feels like they're hitting their form at just the right time. And it's too late for the Bundesliga. I'm 100% convinced of that. But it might be just in time for the Champions League. Because in the past, it's often been the other way around, right? That they hit their form so early on, the Bundesliga title was won. There's nothing to play for them anymore. And then they would go out in the Champions League. This time around, this is the added factor. This is the only title hope. There's nothing else. So I think that if they get a result in London on their current form, and this is the big if, Harry Kane is fit, I think they have a pretty good chance.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Fans, this episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is BLEAV, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
I suppose I share your optimism about Kane, because Kane has a wonderful record against Arsenal. I think he's the leading scorer in the history of the North London derby. But to me, I don't think there's a blueprint to beating this Arsenal at the moment, because they've been pretty successful. But
Porto showed it.
I suppose that.
But
that
I don't think Bayern
bit...
can play like that.
Well, this is the problem. Like I from that Porto side, I saw a team that blocked up the middle of the pitch, sat quite deep. But I think they had a bit of an emotional hold over Arsenal. I think they're a little bit more savvy, a bit smarter in that game. And Arsenal pretty lucky to come through. To me, I don't see that. I don't see a Bayern the players that you need to block out the middle of the pitch. I think Pavlovic is a ball player.
Yeah.
I don't think Goretzka's an eight, clearly. I worry about what happens when Arsenal get bodies around their centre back.
Yeah.
Because
season, right? We've seen that many times against Leipzig, against Leverkusen. The only team that couldn't do it was Dortmund, right?
Yeah, well, you and I started the season at the Super Cup. We sat next to each other and watched Leipzig rip through the middle in transition. Every time there was an offensive transition, Bayern looked terrified. I don't think that's ever changed. Like I think they've improved in certain areas. I think that vulnerability is still there. And if you have that as a side, last team I want to play is Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, but Arsenal's Champions League record has been so bad this year. I mean, yes, yeah. They're through, but like I have not seen many games where they convinced me.
Yeah.
And that is really the flip side of it, is that, yeah, Bayern are very vulnerable, but this Arsenal team is too. In the Champions League, not in the Premier League. In the Premier League, obviously, they've been incredible.
They look excellent in the Premier League. I suppose you could take a little bit of solace from the fact that, well, the Bundesliga kind of is over, and so Tuchel can possibly justify not going through the Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday cycle and just saying to players like, certainly someone like Goretzka, who physically has been he's had a bit of a difficult time the last couple of years.
Yep.
Sané, probably. Musiala, Kane, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little bit difficult if the Lewandowski record is in sight. But Arsenal can't do that, clearly. Arsenal can't afford to lose or drop a point against City and Liverpool in that sort of three-way
title race. And Arsenal has other title options. Like, how realistic is it for Arsenal to win the Champions League? Because, like, look at the gauntlet that they have to walk through. Next is Man City.
Man City. I don't see anybody getting through Man City.
So
Bayern, Arsenal, anyone.
So, everything can happen in two legs, right? But like, right. Man City is the favourites to win the Champions League in my books as well. Although, if I count on Real Madrid, never ever make that mistake. But, you know, to stay on point is, like, for Bayern, though, interestingly enough, they have been there before where the Champions League was their last route to win a title, and that was of course in 2012 when they lost the final to Chelsea, and the drama that happened afterwards basically led to this 11 titles in a row, right? But I could see Tuchel and the Bayern players say, this is it, this is the only thing we can win, and we're going to throw everything at it and we're going to disregard everything else. And I think that can make a big difference.
Well, in a strange kind of one of those funny symmetries that European football throws up every now and again, if you go back to that Chelsea defeat, that Chelsea team was terrible.
It was.
Like it got
horrendous.
Oh, yeah. It was, obviously, they got rid of Andrea Villas-Boas. They were their head coach is Roberto Di Matteo. Like, you had fullbacks playing centre-half. You had a team that was really gaffer-taped together. And somehow, the kind of the professional pride of some fairly disaffected senior players, Drogba, Terry, Lampard, Cech. Like, if you have individual players in the Champions League, you have a chance, always.
Yeah.
Always.
That's how Madrid does it so many times, right?
For sure. Like, how many Real seasons in La Liga were not all that impressive, and yet in European football, they have that curious reserve of, it's not quite self-belief, but just wisdom, I guess.
And I think this group of Bayern players might have that, which is really weird. And it's funny that you mentioned this Chelsea side, because I was living in London that year. And I remember watching that final, and they had no business getting into extra time.
Never have got past Barcelona. They should probably never have got past Benfica.
And they should have gotten smashed 3 or 4-0 in the final by Bayern. It's the Champions League can be really bizarre that way, and that's why I have this weird sense of optimism for Bayern and their fans. I'm not a Bayern fan. The jersey that just fell down.
Your 1860 jersey has deserted you, but
but you know, it's just a weird one. I just sense, you know, like Stefan made this joke. I think that because 7 years ago, Bayern smashed Arsenal 10-2 in the round of 16. It's a completely different scenario, of course. I think it because I think this Bayern team is a bit on a mission in this competition. I think that is the difference here.
I want to share your optimism. I'm a Tottenham fan. I think Arsenal proved too strong. I think Arsenal are a super impressive side. And my fear is that Bayern take an absolute hammering in London.
We'll see. Speaking of super impressive sides, though, let's switch gears. Stuttgart, super impressive. I know they're third in the Bundesliga table, Sepp, but I make the argument all the time that they're actually Germany's second best team.
That's an interesting one. I mean...
Team.
Team, yes. Team, yes. Yes. I mean, I... they are certainly, I would say that in terms of teams that I've enjoyed watching this season, they are one and 1A with Leverkusen. I love the way that Stuttgart play.
I too.
The intricacy of their attacking football is just a joy. And actually, it's good that we're talking about this weekend, because I thought it was a pretty good example of it against Hoffenheim.
So good.
They're great. They're a joy, and they're a real credit to the Bundesliga too. And And I'm. You know what? We might get onto this, but it's so gratifying when you see a national team coach say, "Right, I know that not all of these individual parts are that impressive, literally in a literal sense. But if you look, well, they've added up to. Of course, those players should be in the national team squad.
Yeah, that's how it used to be." The best informed
player. It's meritocracy. Yeah, but then the best players were all gathered in the same place. So you have a little bit of a commentary on where Bayern are. The Dortmund thing is really interesting too, because
I'm old enough to remember national teams that weren't just Dortmund and Bayern. I remember a 1996 squad that was pretty mixed, and I remember a 1990 squad that was pretty mixed too. You know, and it was a lot of players from abroad in those teams as well, right? So we've kind of lost that by thinking that all the best players had to play for Bayern and Dortmund, and then increasingly only for Bayern. And I think
I mean, if you go back to 1990, that's a really interesting point. I'm going to barge my way into that point of yours there. If you go back to 1990, I suppose you still have the kind of the financial primacy of Italian football.
Is it?
So you've got Bremen and Andy Bremer, Jürgen Klinsmann and
Lothar
playing in Serie A. In 1996, the Bundesliga is still 3 years away from kind of the new age of like professional, in inverted commas, football. And so you could probably argue that since 2000, you kind of don't really have this situation where
2014 World Cup winning team was mostly Bayern and Dortmund, wasn't it? There's a few Real. It was was at Arsenal already?
I think Ozil was at Arsenal.
Tony was moved to Real that was summer. At Arsenal. Yeah, Mertesacker was at Arsenal.
Yeah, yeah. The Andre Schürrle was at Chelsea. Yeah.
Götze was at Bayern. And obviously the Boateng was at Bayern, and Hummels was
Chris
at that point in
Real.
Dortmund.
Was Chris a Real?
Kroos went that summer for Alonso.
Went that summer. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. In that trade, right? Alonso went the other way, essentially.
Point being, meritocracy. Right? Mm. Like, also, Jan-Niklas Beste from Heidenheim, who I think a different manager 3 months away from a home European championship doesn't say, I'm going to tell this guy that was in the Zweite Bundesliga 12 months ago, but he absolutely deserves to be in the squad.
Yeah.
Like he's as a sort of representation of Frank Schmidt's football, but also like a player who's got the absolute most out of his ability. You want to see that in the national team, not the kind of the group of disaffected players who are being shoved into awkward positions that was in Qatar.
Yeah. I would actually make the argument that two players from Heidenheim should be in that squad. Dingshi.
Yeah.
And he's declared today, of course, that he's open to play for Germany, similar to Dennis Ondorf.
Is he born in Germany?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Dennis Ondorf obviously declared for Germany already and is in that squad, really well deserved. He scored 14 Bundesliga goals this season. He is probably Germany's most informed striker. Should be there. actually, other than Kai Havertz, who has been incredible recently, he could be the number nine. But I want to stick to the Stuttgart team, because I looked at the lineup for this weekend. 8 out of the 11 starters were German.
Yeah,
you know, and German head coach as well. And you know, this is something that is also a little different than what we've seen. You know, it shows you that you don't need. There's been this trend, and you know, Leipzig is one of those teams that does that, for example. It was just sign a bunch of talented players from France and then hope for the best. Stuttgart has shown that you can find Germans and play incredible football as well. And these players weren't all obvious.
Well, look where some of these players were just a few years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know they haven't made it into this squad, but Stiller and Wagnermann probably have a, you know, are on the fringes of the German squad at the moment.
Stiller makes it if Pavlovic doesn't get called up.
I would have had Stiller. I think Stiller's had a fantastic season.
Yeah, but Stiller can't play for another country. You know, it sounds mean. I think Pavlovic 100% deserves the call up. But that's also a little bit of future planning, I think. And the other issue, too, is if you're calling up Kors, where are you playing Stiller?
Yeah, I always forget about that bit of it because he might as well still be. Yeah.
The national team will be there for Stiller
next
after the Euros. Yeah. He's so young still, and it will be there for him for a long time, let's be honest here.
Well, I think Stiller ends up back at Bayern Munich at some point, probably. But they're still really highly regarded there. I think, I remember as some of this got lost in kind of the conversation about the new home shirt being released and that kind of thing, but this is probably the first time that I saw a German national team squad announced since I got here, which is just over 3 years ago now. And thought, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this team does.
Yeah, same. As a German, really excited.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because I don't have a separate conversation for a different podcast, but I haven't developed a real affinity for the German national football team yet. I don't know if I ever will. But so yeah. I wanted to hear it from a German, or sorry, Bavarian.
I think
your dad has told me that's not the same thing. So
it's not.
I identify
as I work with two Scottish people at Transfermarkt, and we have these conversations all the time because they always say, "You Germans," and I'm like, they don't mean me.
Yeah.
And you know, in fairness, Hamburg and Munich are two very different places. I sometimes struggle the inner politics of working of a Hamburg-based company just as much as my Scottish colleagues do. You know, the German national team is still my national team because unlike my Scottish colleagues, I don't can just pick and choose a different national team. It doesn't work that way. No, I am really excited for this team because I think it's based on form. Mm. You know, for the first time in a long time, yes, there's still some players in there where I'm like, okay, Thomas Müller, but Thomas Müller will give you something on and off the bench that you can just not.
Yeah.
You know, he's a mascot like Lukas Podolski was back in the day. And that's fine because he does carry. When things get tough, you can look at him and find a solution. I also am not 100% sold on Neuer over Ter Stegen, for example.
Me neither.
Although it sounds like that's not set in stone, right? There's going to be a conversation between Nagelsmann and the two goalkeepers, and it's going to get decided then. So, you know, there's still some things in there where I'm like, I wish it was based more on performances, but it's increasingly the Stuttgart guys, they all deserve their call-ups. Pavlovic deserves their call-up over Goretzka. You know, if you look at the two and the way they have played, Goretzka's been better the last two games, but he's also been better since he's not been called up, right? Like, so you kind of almost sense like the non-call-up was actually pushing him into the right direction. Andres deserves to be called up in this team, even though he's not always a starter for Leverkusen, but you know that he's going to have a role.
He's so versatile.
You look at Pascal Gross, what he's done in the Premier League, not just this season, but for many years. Many years, he's been one of the most productive players in arguably the best league in the world, right? Mm-hmm. You need to call him up. He's going to help you. And so, you know, when I look at Dennis Undav overdue, you know, based on form, he should probably start over Phil Krug. It's just...
On current form, I'd agree.
Yeah.
I'm quite intrigued. I know he's not playing for Stuttgart. I'm intrigued by what Maximilian Bayer might do when he's surrounded by better players. Because I don't think this is a particularly good TSG side. I think he's shown, not probably before the Winterpause, but I thought he's already shown like he's a really good finisher. And he's the kind of chance taker, which I don't... I know Phil Krug scores goals, but there's something about it which is not...
He seems more effective.
That's the word I'm searching for.
He is more effective. You feel like Füllkrug, for a big striker and his classic number nine, he creates a lot of space and he does score goals. Doesn't score enough goals for me. overall. You know, he of course his scoring rate for Germany is quite strong, but I agree with you. Maximilian Bayer is so effective and dangerous. And yeah, you put him. Let's put him in a Dortmund team. He'd probably be in the mid, in the high double digits. You know, like 19, 20 goals, possibly.
How do you give him the chances that Pandur has had at Leipzig, for instance.
For example, you know. So it's a really good point. And I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, overall you get the sense it's pointing into more of a direction. Or players don't have to pay big clubs, they have to perform well to be in this national team.
Which I really like. I remember right at the beginning of the season, I was writing about Stuttgart generally and about...
Yeah.
It was the six-month anniversary of Hennes taking over, and it sort of encompassed the Relegation win over Hamburg and the start of the Bundesliga season. I remember thinking, what an interesting story Max Mittelstadt is. Just because part of one of the worst Hertha Berlin sides I've ever seen. And only joined for like €500,000. But then, and he's not, I wouldn't say he's one of those overpowering fullbacks in the sense that he's not going to dazzle you with his athletic ability. He's not the most dynamic player.
Yeah.
But he's one of those really interesting, neat, internal, inverting fullbacks.
Yeah.
Who I think pretty different to David Raum. He's probably going to be first choice, I would imagine. I can't see that changing. Maybe, but all of a sudden you have, instead of the prospect of Nico Schlotterbeck being shunted out to fullback and being asked to just do his best, which
is not good
at international level, you can't, crazy, right? All of a sudden you have the right shaped pieces for the right shaped holes.
Yeah.
And that's what's exciting about it. And players who are in form while they're doing that as well.
And you know what? There's a really strong parallel between Stuttgart and the German national team, which actually kind of reminds me of when Dortmund were the best under Jürgen Klopp, because there's so many players that became world champions, right? Yeah. That were discovered by Borussia Dortmund that really weren't that good. Like, let's remember Kevin Großkreutz is a world cup winner. But his role was perfect. He fitted that role perfectly. And we have to remember that to be successful, you can't just throw together the best 23 players and hope for the best, which is what Germany has done for a very long time. And we always had, like, on talent, those 23 players were always way better than the results. But the results were bad because they were never teams. Yeah. You haven't seen a German national team in probably a good 6 years because they were all good, brilliant individuals. But there was no Andrich, there was no Beste, there was no Mittelstadt. You know, they weren't these, in North American sports, you call them the glue players. The players that hold it together. And they don't need to be brilliant.
Overachievers, they just need
to
well.
They just need to do their job. They need to play left back. They need to play number six. They need to play, they score the goals, you know. And we haven't really seen that much. And it feels like Nagelsmann has gone out and done that, and it's interesting because he's done it the same way that Hoeneß has built his team in Stuttgart. Hoeneß has gone out in Stuttgart and said, okay, we need a left back, right? Mittelstadt. Fürich is a pretty good player. Yeah, we can play him there. And then he's taken players that not and necessarily individually are the most talented players in Germany, but they're the best players for that position that they need to play in, right? And yeah. I think we sort of somehow forgotten that in Germany, that that's actually required. We don't need, you know, you can't have a squad with six midfielders that do the same job. It doesn't work. You know, the results, that's how you lose 3-0 or 4-0 to Austria or Turkey. And I feel like Nagelsmann has identified that. No, but it's true. You know, like these teams are based on talent. They should not have lost those games, but they lost those games because there's no glue players.
It feels like... it's been really interesting to arrive in Germany at this period in the national team's history, because it feels like they're going through something very similar to what England suffered through between about 2006 and 2016, where you had players who they had such high status within the country that they had to be picked, but they also had to be accommodated within the team to the team's detriment, and always in a way that precluded like a high-performing overachiever from being picked in the first place. I remember Wayne Rooney being picked in central midfield in Euro 2016 during the game against Iceland.
What a bad idea.
Yeah, but you look at you look at that tournament cycling that suffered through, and it's very similar to what Germany have experienced since, well, since 2018.
Before, well, it started. I think it started with. Interesting enough, it started in 2017 when they won the Confederations Cup, right?
Right.
I think that's when Germany was at the height of their power, because all of a sudden they had
that second team, and everyone was like, "They're so I remember.
They essentially had the U21 win the European Championships. They had the Confederation. They won the Confederations Cup with the second team, right? And there was this like all of a sudden there was three teams. And the failure here wasn't that there isn't enough talent to play. I think through the state there's enough talent to play for Germany to be good. The problem is there isn't enough players that can fill the holes necessary to win. And there's a big difference between the two things, you know?
Well, it's interesting because you and I, like, we've been in a lot of the same round tables with people that would, like, ex-German internationals or sporting directors or people who often have an opinion on these things. And it's amazing how often when you ask, like, where's the next German number nine? Where is the next, you know, like, where's the next truly elite German center half? Like, a lot of these guys say, we became really good at producing multi-skilled players who could do all sorts of different roles. But within that, lost the ability to create specialists who play in positions which are just specialized. Yeah. That's really interesting. It's amazing how often that comes up in conversation.
And that's why I think the Stuttgart team is so intriguing. Because Pernas has fixed it.
I think
Alonso has too with Leverkusen, but he's done it. And I actually, that's not fair. Rolfes and Alonso have fixed this at Leverkusen. Because we have to remember
Rolfes does not get enough credit.
He does not. Simon Rolfes built this team. And,
amazing.
He went out and signed Grimaldo. Right? No one thought that was a good idea.
People thought Grimaldo was a problem. Yeah. As a professional.
Which is crazy. But like he is the perfect player for that role. And that is probably not going to work somewhere else. He went out and identified Xhaka as the midfielder that they needed.
Hoffman.
He went before that, Palacios. Hoffman is another good one. Palacios is another one. And I feel like Hoeneß and Stuttgart have done the exact same thing. They just signed so many Germans now that Nagelsmann is saying, oh, great, this is interesting. Very interesting for me. Because they have my left back, they have my right back, they have my two midfielders, they have my center forward, and they have my left winger too. And, you know, actually, I think Nübel should be in the squad too. Nübel has been excellent.
Interesting.
Right? So, but it's interesting that the two teams that have been punching way above their weight, and Leverkusen is included, and of course this team is excellent, have basically gone out and changed the paradigm of how German teams have built their teams. And I think Stuttgart in particular is a really good lesson there for Nagelsmann and this upcoming Euros. I guess the question then is that would be actually a really interesting article to explore how Stuttgart can be the example of how Nagelsmann should play the Euros. But I think that's actually true, right?
Let me ask a different question though, because I want to tap into your German/Bavarian-ness.
We're going a little bit over today, but I guess we can do another 10 minutes here.
10 minutes. So one of the things that people who don't live in Germany may not realize is that interest in the national team is super low. Like it's been steadily in decline since probably 2014.
Mm-hmm.
There's a statistic during the rounds where at the 2018 World Cup, over 20 million Germans were on average watching Germany's games during the tournament.
Yeah.
In Qatar, that fell to like 8-9, something like that.
Which is still pretty good numbers. That's bigger percentage-wise than what the Super Bowl does in America.
Yeah, I mean, it is good, but for a country where this is the dominant sport, it's still pretty low.
Yes.
So do you think, what's the solution? I know there's no one answer. There's not a silver bullet.
Well, I'm old enough to remember the late 1990s and early 2000s where it was the same. This Germany team hasn't, you know, I think a lot of foreigners have this perception that it's always been all conquering because they have won a lot in their history, you know.
That was my perception before I got here too.
Yeah, but there has been, I remember this. I remember when we had a 34-year-old Oliver Bierhoff trying to score goals for Germany at the World Cup. I'm old enough to remember this. I think the difference is that during the last crisis, we were just bad. The national team was just bad. There wasn't any world-class players. This one is weird because there is enough really good players. All these players play at the best clubs in the world and Champions League and are successful there, right? At clubs like Arsenal, like Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern, you know, the top Premier League teams. And that's what makes this weird, because everyone is like, well, this Germany team isn't any good. And then you look at the individual players and like, but it should be.
Should be.
You know, like should that's be. The real thing. And I think it's almost like the opposite of what happened in the late 90s. In the late 90s, they were just bad. So they had to then eventually form a good team. And then these players from this good team became hot commodities, right? This time, it's almost the other way around. I think there needs to be hard choices, and these hard choices are being made of maybe cutting some of these very good players in order to actually form a team. You almost have to lower the talent level in order to increase the level of the team. And I think, you know, that hasn't quite sunk in yet. But I do want to stress that Germany as a nation, we have gone through this before. You know, Germany isn't always all conquering. We have these periods where we win everything and are very successful. But the lull has happened before. I think what's maybe different, the tournament results were never this bad.
But what's the way to reconnect the public? Is it just success?
I mean, look what happened when Flick was fired and Fuller was on the sidelines.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, everyone watched. Dormant.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, everyone watched, including myself, because Rudy Fuller is back. And
everyone
knows
Rudy Fuller.
Yeah. Everyone lost Fuller because, you know, but everyone lost Fuller because Fuller is successful. Won the World Cup, guided a really bad German national team to the World Cup final in 2002. That team had no business being there. They were the Chelsea of national teams. But they were a really good team. They were a really, really good team.
Oliver Neuville team.
Yeah, I remember that.
But you
know what? But they were a team, and they galvanized the nation because they acted like a team, and they were making the impossible possible. Doesn't take much, Sepp, to turn this around. You just need to win a few games. They don't even need to win the Euros. If they reach the semifinal or the quarterfinal and play good football, everyone will be happy. Yeah.
Same thing.
So
that's interesting to me.
They just need to act like a team again. You know, they need to put the national Mannschaft, they need to put the Mannschaft back into the national, and then we're good. But, you know, I find this whole Stuttgart parallel really interesting, because that's, I think, kind of how Hoeneß rescued them last year and gotten them where they are now.
What's encouraging is that Stuttgart team got better quickly, really quickly, to the point where I know they were in the relegation game, but they had
no business there. Yeah,
it was with you. You were there that night. Like within 10 minutes, you thought this isn't even going to be.
Yeah. And I think that is a really good blueprint for Nagelsmann in Germany. I know it's not easy to copy, but I think that's the blueprint. That could be the headline for this podcast.
Nice.
Stuttgart, the blueprint for Nagelsmann. I'm going to let Stefan know to put that on there. Sepp, we've gone over, but that's fine. I'm pretty sure listeners will love this. Thank you so much for joining me today. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by Bet Online. Sepp, what do you have to plug?
Nothing, Manny, other than the fact that I'm heading off on 5 days holiday. Leave me alone. Don't look for my work.
Okay.
Although, I a couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing a bit of an interview with Rocco Reitz.
Great. Yeah,
so I'm really looking forward to meeting Rocco and chatting about his career. So that'll be out in a few weeks, I think.
Think we'll be in Germany soon.
Me too. I think he's a super story and super player. So hope that's the case.
That name alone, superstar potential. I hope Stefan will be back later this week with a couple more podcasts. Just a couple notes. This is the international break, so no preview show, obviously. And we're going to see what we're going to do for bonus shows. And we're obviously going to cover the national team as well. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back later this week. Until then, auf Wiedersehen.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.